right, guys, it's another week. It's another week into the development. It's another week here on the MCAST. This week, I'm super excited about this show. I don't know, Hans, you know, over the last couple years or so, there's been this huge comic book, like, renaissance, I almost call it. Like, all of these characters that we've grown up watching. We were kind of nerdy being kids, like, following these guys, but all of a sudden, now they're $100 million movies. It's Iron Man, it's the Hulk, it's, well, I don't know what else.
Well, there's Iron Man, the Hulk, you know, there's the new Batman movie.
Yeah.
I mean, how can you forget that one?
That's coming out soon. I'm just talking about, like, this total resurgence. Like, it started out with Spider-Man, and then,
there's a Fantastic Four.
Yeah, it's
series.
Just like everybody is all about these superheroes. You know, Heroes came on NBC. That was a huge thing like that.
Well, I mean, this summer is kind of basically, you know, the summer of the superheroes, really, you know.
Yeah, exactly. It's the decade of the superheroes. So it's what a perfect stage that's set for our game to come out with nothing but superheroes and supervillains.
Oh, yeah. And what a good tie-in right there with our game, you know.
Perfect timing. We're gonna totally piggytail off of all of that cultural awareness, I think, is the buzzword.
Cultural relevance, maybe?
Cultural relevancy, I don't know, one of the two.
It's one of the two.
Whatever those buzzwords that they –
That's market speak.
Those guys that make a lot of money use those big words. I don't know. All I know is that I'm super pumped to see this Batman movie. Yep. This week – I'm really excited, too, because we have Jimmy Palmiotti. He's going to come in and talk to us in a little bit right now and let us know kind of like what he's been doing, what he's working on, what his experiences were like working on the game with the team. So I'm super excited to kind of pick his brain and hopefully he has some interesting stories about us, because he's kind of a – I don't want to say anything negative. I'm not going to say that he's quirky, because people say that, you know, quirky is kind of a negative.
He's character charismatic.
He is charismatic, exactly.
He's a character as well. I mean –
The ladies love him is what I hear, so I'm interested to pick his brain.
Yeah, true. I mean, well, if you ask him, I'm sure he'll say that as well, but but he's a good guy, and I'm excited to have him on this week and to ask him some questions and talk to him.
Well, let's talk about something that's going on in the game this week. I know the fans are tuning into this MCAST to kind of hear little snippets of information about what we can release. The one thing I want to talk about this week, I guess, is the progress that we've made on Free Fall Combat. I know that you've been involved in a lot of what's going on with that, and it's turning out to be even bigger than we anticipated before.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the teasers that have gone out kind of just showed one aspect of it, you know, with a guy falling down and then kind of switching around. But people don't understand the robustness of that mode and how much they can get into that.
Well, it's definitely evolved. I'll say that, because, you know, like you said, the first videos you've seen, it's just basically watch them fall down, watch them throw a punch, watch them reverse. Now there's, you know, Ed's definitely been more involved in, you know, developing that out more. There's more game mechanics involved now. It's not just a simple punching.
Yeah.
So
there's a super move. Each character's going to have their own falling combat super move that's going to be in there. There's going to be based on what your interaction is with your opponent during the fall is going to dictate how much damage you take when you hit. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not one of those just like, okay, hey, here's a cinematic cutscene between level transition and let's see what happens. It's actually like player involvement, so you have to pay attention and your timing has to be right. I'm super stoked about this. I wish I could say more about it, but I don't want to give it out of the bag.
No, I think Ed would get a little upset if you said too much.
I'm tired of being scared of what Ed says all the time.
You're tired?
The people want to hear information. The people listen to this podcast to hear us and to get
Why do I get this feeling Ed's going to be storming and going, you're not afraid of me anymore?
He's going to say it in the Scorpion voice. He's going to be like, get over here, or some crap.
And then I'll be here the following week doing, hi, welcome to the podcast. It's just me, Hans. No, Ed would never do that to you. Ed loves you too much.
I know. It's like a love-hate relationship, you know. I hate that he's my boss, but I love it at the same time. You know? He demands excellence. I guess that's something we can talk about. We haven't talked about it yet. What did that like working for a video game celebrity, I guess. I don't know what you would call him. I imagine that's what it's like.
He's an icon.
Yeah,
that's what I would
icon.
Say.
Exactly.
And like, I hope he hears this because our reviews are coming up. And I'm just saying.
You know, my friends asked me about that, but, you know, we've been trolling the boards and nobody ever asked that. Like on all our like podcast questions, nobody ever asked, hey, what's it like working with Ed? Let me tell you guys what it's like working for Ed. The man demands excellence in everything that you do. It's almost – I used to be in the Air Force, and that was one of our core values is excellence in all you do. I'm totally into that with this guy because he doesn't let anything go.
No, he's never ever
he
truly happy.
He proofreads my emails.
Well, he needs to proofread your emails. But no, seriously, he really gets into it. He's never like quote unquote satisfied in the sense that he always sees there's something we can improve on. You know, so it's always exciting. I'm sure it's a little frustrating at times, but in the end, it
makes
works.
The game
it
better.
It makes the game
exactly.
better. And the people who win are the players, and that's what really matters.
And not us who have to deal with it.
Well, that's why we get paid. Okay,
you get paid. I'm here on a volunteer basis. All right, we're going to bring in Jimmy right now. So let's see he's gotten here. So let's get him in here and ask him a couple questions.
Out of here, and we're going to talk to him and ask him a few questions. Some of you may recognize his name from his works in DC Comics, such as some of the Countdown series. He's also one of the writers we've gotten for the Mortal Kombat versus DC Universe, him and Justin Gray. So we're going to ask him a few questions, and hopefully he'll grace us with some answers and entertain us at the same time, because, you know, Hector and I aren't that good at entertaining.
I'm pretty entertaining. Jimmy, I'm super excited to have you on the show.
I can tell you put some pants on there.
No, I really am. You know, when we first started talking about the project and, you know, all the kind of company rumblings were going around, I heard your name kind of like tossed out there, and I was really looking forward to see what you and Justin Gray, who's your writing partner, you guys have worked together obviously on a bunch of stuff, like what you were going to come up with our characters. Like, how was it first brought to you, and what were you thinking about when you was like, hey, I'm going to write something for Mortal Kombat?
Well, it's funny because Justin and I, you know, we're huge video game players, and when they approached us with it, we just smiled. We're like, what, Mortal Kombat versus the DC Universe? I'm like, and all these images in my head was like, what are we going to do with Superman and Wonder Woman? And you know, and they kind of said, would you guys be interested? We said, absolutely. How can we turn this down? It's like, it's never been done. And that alone, you know, the idea that it's something completely new that hasn't been done is so tempting for us to get our hands on, and it's been pretty cool ever since, you know. And it's one of those things where, as fans of all the characters, it's a thing that comes up. It says, "What if?" You know, it's a what if scenario.
Yeah,
you know, and this one is definitely a huge one because the universes are kind of different.
Oh yeah, definitely. What were some of the challenges you had, you know, trying to come up with?
Well, you know, I got to tell you, the John Vogel and all the guys at Mortal Kombat, like they know the characters so well. When we first went into the room with them in the Chicago office, they were all dressed as the individual characters.
And we really, are you sure about that?
Yeah, we really appreciate. Mate, I think so. I think underneath their clothes, they weren't actually. And you know, so the interesting, you know, the cool thing was, well, we have to, since Justin and I have experience writing the DC characters, great thing about getting together was like, how are they even going to be exist in the same room? You know, and the challenges are, of course, how are we going to, you know, bring these worlds together, bring these characters together, have a big overall story, and then make it insanely fun, you know, because again, why bother if it's not going to be fun? And fortunately, you guys, the Mortal Kombat guys, had pretty much everything worked out somewhat. You know, we came in and said, yeah, okay, that's going to work and that's not going to work. But and then we kind of went from there. But Justin and I both thank God that you guys had them all this stuff worked out. And
what'd you think about the kind of feedback that we've been getting from the online community? You know, the very vocal, I call them, online community. You know, a lot of the MK, they're like, you know, fanatics. They're really into it. And, you know, when your name was attached to it, you could kind of see some of the back and forth. Like, how are they going to make it make sense? Like,
oh, yeah.
Were you following that? Or?
Oh, yeah. I read everything. And and I understand, you know, things are written with passion behind them. And I always say the people that aren't happy are a lot more vocal on the internet than the people who are. But that said, there were some really interesting things brought up in the replies, and, you know, in a lot of after the articles, people commenting. And I think that conversation, and I think having that kind of feedback and people feeling passionately about it, just goes to show how excited they are for the game. Even if they're sitting there and saying, I'm going to hate this, well, my attitude is they're going to have to try it to really hate it.
Right,
so
exactly.
I'm okay with that, because if we can get them in the room to play the game, mm-hmm. then I feel we're going to win them over, because once the game is, you know, in front of them, they're going to actually see that their fears aren't as bad as they thought they were. And again, there's I was just telling a story earlier that there's a lot of feedback because Justin and I are actually involved that they feel like, well, the DC characters are going to sound like the DC characters, and which was the plan the whole time. And then there's a certain amount of people that I read that are Marvel Comics fans, and they're like, they can't wait to play the game to be the Scorpion of Sub-Zero and then beat up Superman and Batman. So I thought, well, that's kind of funny too, you know?
Another demographic we didn't even think about.
Right, right. And so, you know, the idea that people are having this discussion is just another way of the game having heat. And I think the more pieces of the game they start seeing and once they start seeing the visuals, I think not only are they going to calm down about any fears they have, but they're actually going to get 10 times more excited about the game.
Tell us some stories about you on the road. I know you've been at a couple events over the last couple months. I'm sure people have been kind of asking you, like, hey, what's going on? Can you tell us who's in the game? Like, what's going on? Like, you know, we've had a few run-ins with some of our MK fans out in some of our press events that are just like, you know, I won't tell anybody, I swear, you know.
Yeah, I've been plied with beers, with women, with cars, and
I really need to start hanging out with you.
I'm telling you, we did a couple of conventions in the past couple of months, and I have to say at least 5 or 6 times a day somebody comes up and says, so should I buy this game or am I gonna, you know, tell me the truth? And I'm like, absolutely.
Yeah, you do tell them to buy the
game,
right?
Yeah, of course. Okay. Absolutely. And then they say, well, can you tell me who else is in it besides the ones that are announced? And I'm like, I can't really. And so then they just don't pay attention to me. And they just start rattling off these insane characters. And I'm just like, I can't tell you who's going to be. Yeah, don't you understand? That's the fun of it. And eventually you learn. And I kind of love having that on it. And I lied to a couple. Mm-hmm. You know, I definitely told one. I just
totally
made
fun.
Up stuff.
Just make
and
up stuff,
and yeah, I figured I'd make it on the internet and that's get everybody
so,
else
So you're
off.
That one leak that we read about online. Goes, I have an inside knowledge guy on
yeah.
who now
yeah.
says
yeah.
these characters.
Yeah. Yeah, and they're all wrong. That's the great part. I did throw a couple of odd ones. I always throw my own characters. Oh, yeah. Painkiller Jane's in there. You know? And she's
hey,
not.
How
you know?
Is she part of?
Right. No, but, you know, again, it's cool because, you know, after the game's out, mm-hmm. then I get the whole other group of people coming up to me saying, you know, why did you do that? And, hey, can you make – and on the second one, are you going to use that guy? And, you know, so – but I have been having little small terrorist activity at the shows from real diehard fans. And, again, you know, the DC fans are excited because – this is something they don't really see, a fight
right.
game
right.
in the DCU. It's
not
existent.
One. Yeah, it's the
right.
first one.
And so they're really excited. They're excited about that. And then, you know, they look, at the end of the day, it's just a cool mix on all levels.
Do you feel like it kind of hones your creativity when you have to write in these voices where it's like, okay, I need to get into this guy's head. I need to figure it out. Does it kind of help you out in writing other characters or is it?
Well, I think that... The worst thing you can do as a writer is have all your dialogue sound like you. Mm-hmm. And I definitely, when I'm writing something, actually when Justin and I are sitting in a room, if we want to make the characters sound differently, we'll say, well, you know, hey, Steve over there, who we know is a nut and this and that, we'll make that character Steve. So how would Steve answer that, you know? And with the Mortal Kombat game, you know, the Mortal Kombat versus DCU, we had to do that all the time. With the characters, how would he reply? Would he get talky at this point, or would he just go, "You're gonna die," and then start
and
running
then
at him and kill him? So each
you
character
can always default to that.
Well sure, but sometimes you know, and again, the trick of dialogue is make sure they have the information they need to move forward. At the same time, stay true to the sound of the character,
right.
And that's part of what we do. You know, if we make everybody sound the same, well, then we're not doing our job. And realistically. If you can hear my voice or Justin's voice in the work, mm-hmm. we're not doing our job.
Right.
You know, you have to buy in to the fact that these characters, that's their voice and that's their world. And thank God for wonderful voice actors you guys have because they go in and really make it happen.
Nice. What was your favorite character writing for in this game so far? Which scenes did you really put the most kind of fun or you had the most fun?
Well,
I don't want to say put the most effort into because then people would be like, oh my God, this is...
Well, you know, it's a big mashup game and there's a villain that's a mashup. And so doing the bad guys, though, you know, writing the bad guys is always the most fun
right.
because I'm a nice guy, 88% of the time, okay? But there's that 12% that gets real evil once in a while.
Kind of lets you release your alter ego.
Yeah, and I usually do it like in crowded planes or tight subway trains or something like that. But I mean, so the bad guys are fun to write. And the bad guys in this game, because there's a lot of confusion, there's a lot of mix-up, a lot of mash-up, well, the bad guys are very bad.
Yes.
Okay, and they stay consistently bad. And they're a lot of fun to write because they have to deal with a bunch of do-gooders. Mm-hmm. So I would say that's probably the most fun dialogue to write.
Awesome. I just had a question. You know, writing these stories, you know, whether for this game or comic books for that matter, I mean, what's kind of the overall process for you guys? I mean, do you guys start out with like a general arc of a story, or do you already have like certain lines in mind when you first start out, or?
Well, we with this game, we got lucky because the guys at Midway had the idea, the main
story they worked spine. Out,
yeah, the main story spine. Mm-hmm. And normally, when we come in and write a game, there is no spine. There's nothing. There's just like here's the character. So we had a story spine to build up on, and then each meeting, each conference, each email, we started building up the story in layers. And then how would they make sense with these characters, and how can these two exist in the same room? So we were lucky because usually we're on our own when we do this. So in this game, we had a whole crew of guys with us, and it was a lot easier. Like I said, Ed, John, and the guys at Midway, they had everything worked out pretty well. So any questions we had, bang, they were right there, and they had a vision of what they wanted to do. And then when we came in, we said, okay, that vision works, and now we have to tweak it towards the DC side. And it worked out pretty good. The synchronicity is there, and I think it comes across in the game. I think when you play the game, there is no awkward scene. There is no awkward period. It flows wonderfully, and I think that's the thing that's going to really get the game people going crazy.
Yeah, the story mode is definitely cool. It kind of makes it ties it all together. It kind of makes sense. You know, when the initial idea kind of went out there, a lot of people were just like, "What the hell? Like, why would Scorpion fight?
How could this even happen?
Why would Scorpion fight Batman? Like, I mean, it doesn't do it." And it was a lot of pressure for you to like, okay, let me write the story that makes sense.
Well, DC did publish a book, Superman versus Muhammad Ali. So I figure if they can get that out there and make that work, we could do anything. You know what? You have to be clever, you have to be smart, and you have to have a lot of respect for the character, and that's the only way you're going to find a way to make it work, and I think it really does.
A couple other questions that, you know, we can kind of fill in right now. Sure. I want the non-Wikipedia facts about Jimmy Palmiotti right now. I want five facts that if I look up your name online, I'm not going to know, because I kind of went through
really?
It to kind of – a lot of that was kind of like – generic, like, yeah, Jimmy does this, his girlfriend's this, like that.
Okay,
kind of, like, right. I want to hear something that we can't find on Wikipedia right now about you.
Okay, I once caught a guy robbing my car, in the process of robbing my car.
Nice.
And I pulled him out by his ankles
GTA
and beat him
style.
With a garbage pail cover.
In real life? Or
yeah.
Was that
in real life. In Manhattan. It was. I parked my car, and what a wonderful car to fight for. It was a Ford Escort.
Nice.
And I parked the car. And I went around the corner to St. Mark's in Manhattan, and I left some papers in the car. And I went back, and as I'm walking towards my car, I see the car door open, and a guy, this grown man, like in there going through the glove compartment with his legs out. And I'm looking, I'm saying, that's not my car. And I'm like, that's my car. I'm like, that's not my car. And as I'm walking towards it, that's like maybe like, you know, 200 feet, right? Uh-huh. The adrenaline's pumping in me. And I don't know. I must have seen The Godfather too many times because I just grabbed the garbage pail lid and I pulled – and I went up to the car. And there he is. He's just ignoring me. Uh-huh. He's in the car and he's shuffling through everything. So I pulled him out by his ankles and beat him with the garbage pail lid until the police came and threw me down on one car and then threw me on the other. And they told me to get in my car and park it another block away and go home and do whatever I got to do. And they took care of the guy. So it was a very – I think they just kicked his ass.
Nice.
You know, it's New York cops. We love them. But let's see. That's one thing.
That's
the violent part. But I was justified with it. You know? Totally. He was robbing my car. And
that must have been kind of surreal, just walking back to your car like, no way,
you know
could
what?
That be somebody.
I'm so not violent. I got to tell you, I'm not a violent person.
But
the adrenaline was like just go. I was like, he's in my crappy car. I'm like, he's robbing the ugliest car on the block, you know. And I just didn't understand it.
That's a great story. I'm actually going to post that on your Wikipedia page.
There you go. You know, it's been told. Let's see, what else do I not know? Well, I I not only worked on the Painkiller Jane show, which a character created by Joe Quesada and I, but I actually had my own trailer on the set.
Nice.
For a week I was there.
Did you have a handler?
I don't really want to mention her. I'm very discreet about that. You know, she was a nice girl and everything, but anyway, I had my own trailer, which was something completely new to me. And then the guy came in later and told me what I couldn't do in it.
Oh.
There's a list of things I couldn't do in it. And I don't want to get into the list, but I didn't even think of doing half of the things he
told
me I couldn't do. And then after that, I was inspired to make a checklist so I can do each one. And I had people telling me, you know, you can't do that because, you know, smoke is going to come out the windows. And, you know, so all right, I don't know if that's a fun fact, but was kind of cool.
That is a fun fact, in a way.
I don't know. Help me out. What would the other ones like?
I'm trying to think. Well, what do you have coming up soon? Like, what's your next big
project? I got one more. I taught arts and crafts. When I was in my when I was like 16 to 18 for like 400 kids in a camp in upstate New York. I taught arts and crafts. I was an arts and crafts teacher. I know how to do like 35 combinations of lanyard.
Nice.
So first off, you have to know what lanyard is to understand it. It looks like long pieces of plastic spaghetti that you kind of – but I taught the kids and I had the teen boys at the camp with the work – they hated arts and crafts. Uh-huh. So I gave them an assignment at the beginning of the summer – that using the popsicle sticks, because we had 10 million of them, they can build a city on this huge table. And at the end of the year, we will blow it up.
Nice.
Right.
Yeah. So all summer, they built this wonderful thing with airports and buildings and everything. At the end of the summer, I stayed true to it. We poured gasoline on it and blew it up.
Wow.
And that was fun.
You're the perfect fit for this game then.
Yeah. There you go. That's right.
That's the exact audience that we're targeting.
The teen
boys that want to blow up a city, man.
They don't like arts and crafts.
No,
unless something's on fire.
I think even a lot of adult men still don't like arts and crafts unless you can blow stuff up.
Yeah. You know, that explains a lot, right?
Yeah.
What do you have coming up pretty soon after this? What's your next big project?
We have, you know, more Jonah Hex for DC, and we're doing our next big book in fall will be Power Girl.
Okay.
That will be a monthly book with me, Justin, and Amanda Connor. And then after that, I know I have a lot of stuff.
Cool. All right. Well, thanks a lot, Jimmy. We appreciate you coming through. And
Thank you for
taking
the time.
My pleasure. Thanks, guys.
Man, that Jimmy guy is one character.
Dude, he's crazy. I'm telling you, he's crazy.
Kooky character. I don't know how many sexual harassment lawsuits are going to be filed from this company. I guess he really – I don't know. I mean, he's an outside contractor, so I don't know if he can get in trouble with our HR department. I guess it's
part of the business. I can tell you, it depends on what state you're living in when all this stuff happens. You know, luckily, we're not in California. Yeah. My gosh.
I learned a lot. I learned a lot from him. That wraps it up for this week on the MCAST. I'm Hector.
And I'm Hans.
And we'll see you guys next week.